What's up, everyone? It's Gavin or Tweak.
What's good? What's good? It's Marcus or Pink.
What up? What up? It's Charles or Chuck.
What's going on, everyone? You got Matt or Has bringing in here another week, another episode of Tweak Talks, of course. That also means another week of Patreon bonus content. If you go over to patreon.com/tweaktalks, check it out. Big Gav already uploaded some VOD review, some great content he's publishing on that channel, on that outlet for you. So check that out. I think we're going to try to stick around and do a little bonus content here as well. Haven't quite formulated the plan there, but we'll figure it out as we go. Good weekend to watch some Smash Brothers, especially for if you're from the state of New Jersey. Wait, Surf's New Jersey, right? I'm not crazy, right? Yeah. I was trying to say, okay. I wasn't sure of the specifics.
Yeah.
Some great results from New Jersey. A lot of interesting tweets and follow-ups from tournaments. We're going to dive into it. But first, how's everyone doing? How you doing, Big Gav?
Good. Also, we just started doing – we started uploading the Patreon bonus content to YouTube if you are a YouTube member, for those who are interested, along with the typical Patreon stuff. So there's a couple options for anyone who's interested. Thanks for the support as always. Yeah, I'm doing all right. I'm just tired. Was a long week. I was gone Thursday to Monday. But yeah, I'm doing pretty well. How are you, Charles?
I'm doing pretty good. I played a lot of Pokemon Go
last weekend. I didn't get to play that much.
You did like 120 raids, I saw.
I did 100.
Wow.
And 13 raids before I found.
That's a whole weekend worth of raids.
Dude, I got one in like 3 tries. I didn't care.
Oh, trust me. I was surrounded by a lot of people that were getting them a lot.
What are the odds on shinies on that? Because it was a special. It was like 1 out of 5 weekend.
I don't know. Well, 1 out of 20 is base odds. So,
yeah.
That's usually the normal stuff. Yeah.
I still had fun. I did a lot of walking. I like the cardio. Trying to just give me the copium, man. Just please.
I thought when I saw you tweet about it, I was like, dang, you probably got a Shundo. I was like, oh, it's just a shiny. It took him 180 tries.
It's crazy. So after day one, didn't get anything, right? And I was like 6 hours of playing. Day two, at one of our first raids, someone comes up to us and we're just, you know, having small talk or whatever. And then they're like, oh yeah, there's this one time that I went like 50 without getting a shiny. And I was like, wow, that's the most I've ever heard of. And then after I said that, I was like, wait a minute, why did I say that out loud?
Mine's a similar number, like 52 or something.
Yeah. Well, mine's is 112.
Good number though.
Oh my God. It was something else, but
somebody do the odds on that in the comments.
You're going to get some good karma. It's okay.
You know what? My last event, the Savari event, I was very lucky. So I'm
completely fine with it. Was that your Beware weekend or no?
I did get a Shundo. No, no, no. I got a Shundo Magnemite, my second Shundo.
That's pretty sick.
Well, yeah, two at least. I mean, who doesn't even?
I did get a shiny Shadow Alolan Grimer over the weekend.
Wow. I don't have a shiny Shadow. Words. That's something I don't have.
Oh, yeah. Only the worst players don't have Shundos. Right, Phil? Those who don't know, EE is still chasing a Shundo, and he's played probably more than all of us, except for maybe
and Gavin.
At this point. Yeah, and Gavin also does not have a Shundo, which is amazing.
Phil's not even close to my level, bro.
He's crazy.
You should be level 50 by now, right, Gavin?
No, I should be in like 49.
Okay, you're...
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's still nuts.
Like halfway through 49 or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. How you doing, Marcus? Oh.
Yeah, I was gonna say, good.
I'm chilling, bro. I only got anything too exciting. I didn't do anything last weekend except for watch some Smash Bros.
Watch both tournaments?
I watched both of them, yeah. Pretty extensively. I watched more Cav Clash at the beginning until like Losers Finals, and then I started watching the Luminosity one because once Syrup was in Grands, it was kind of... Yeah,
I thought if Spargo got through light, then Grands could have gone maybe more in Spargo's way potentially. But I think Syrup had an even better chance than he already had when light made it to Grands.
Yeah.
But they did have a really close grand finals at the regional. So either way, Syrup had to work for it. But it was looking like Syrup's day for sure.
And it's, he's getting more and more comfortable in those.
Yeah, like, he just be winning the tournament moments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's getting a lot more.
It's a skill that you need to develop. So, and he definitely has developed it at this point.
Yeah.
Like getting last hit scenarios. He got a reverse 3-0 on Gluto, like stuff like that to like really close out a big major. Like you need to have some sets like that and some last hit moments like that to like keep yourself in winners, keep the momentum going. Like, yeah.
I think that was the set that you and I texted each other about was the Gluto syrup set. And I thought the same thing when I was watching is like, or looking at the bracket and figuring out and enjoying the tournament is like, if syrup is going to make this run, like it, once he went up 1-0 on Gluto, it's like, all right, yeah, he could probably do this. You know what I'm saying? Definitely. Yeah. He's been close before and he's done really well before, but wrapping, like you said, wrapping it all together is a whole different skill set entirely. It's rare that you just get a tournament. How many people have just had clean, like, oh, I'm just going to win this tournament and that's it. Like it's hard, man. Oh, you had a pretty good tournament this weekend, actually, speaking of results like that. It's pretty smooth.
Yeah. So I think CR winning the HBox event, I forget what it was called.
Like the CoinBox IRL?
Just the IRL thing. Yeah. I think I literally said it on the podcast that that's the type of win that will elevate future like major wins. And like, it reminds me of like someone that comes to mind is like Zomba or like Hurt. Like once they get like one or two, they just start to forget how to lose and they just become even harder opponents. And just being around long enough, you can tell like when they're ready to like start like closing out the whole thing. And yeah, like you said, has like, I think he was playing pretty poorly against Gluto at the beginning and then being able to bounce back, play a lot better, win some last hit scenarios. It's like, okay, now it's going to be really hard to knock him down to loser's bracket. But yeah, shouts to Sierra, bro. Like good shit. There's something about Jersey, bro.
Yep.
He's young and he's already getting these wins under his belt.
Jersey players are nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
Pharaoh had a fantastic run, too.
Yeah, that was the one I was going to call out. Beat Cola game five, which I hate when Cola loses because it kills my interest in watching the bracket. I think most of the world feels that way about it, but it was definitely
he fills a specific role.
He does. Yeah. For sure. But he still made top eight, which he had a good loser's run after an upset like that. And so did Paris, too, getting second place.
Paris had a really nice bounce back all the way to third. What's crazy about Light was I was watching, like, they had it on a TV in the venue, but I was obviously wasn't always looking. But I was looking at Light versus Susu and winners, and I had to go before the first game ended, but I assumed he won the first game. And I came back and was told he lost 3-0, and I was like, it's funny that I didn't see the ending of game one, but I didn't believe them that they were telling me he lost that game. I was like, no way he lost game one. But apparently he did. But he got the run back. He beat Spargo and losers. Clearly not happy with Steve, but I don't think anyone's surprised at that. And also watching Susu play was like, oh, it's like when you run into that. It's like when you run into a Luigi and they like do like and they like don't mess up the combo, or you play against a Kazuya that like clearly won't mess up. It's like that on Steve, and it's like, oh, I'm actually dead every time.
It's
it's like finally foretold.
Yeah, like Raru currently is another one where it's like, oh, this is the one that kills you.
Yeah,
the guy that kills you with Luigi.
Yeah, it's not a 0-80 into an advantage state. It's your stock.
It's the Jackal complaining about Riddles, you know, the classic where he's complaining about Kazuya. Yeah, I think we've said that on here before, but just, you know, the Kazuya, you know, playing against some Kazuya mid, high level, whatever, and they're decent at the game and they're doing pretty cool things. But then the second that, like, they're not that great, but the second they grab you or hit you with an electric, they just 0-death you instantly. And he said, like, I thought it'd be a great skit idea for for a throne or something where you that would be the player so the player turns into riddles, like we have riddles there, and it's just
as
like
soon as they get the grab, they turn into riddles and the
some
clothes
scrub
are like,
playing, yeah.
The clothes are baggy on riddles because it's like someone else's clothes. Like
that's
shout to Dracula. Right, it's the funniest story ever. He's like, yeah, everything's fine. And then the second they hit me, I turn to my left and it's riddles next to me.
Dude, competing in Smash does some shit to you, man.
I'll say Susu had a lot of heads turning in terms of Steve optimized advantage state, and then Syrup as well. Cart. Yeah,
what is it called? PBR Bear.
Yeah.
That bear got some base knockback, bro.
Brother.
Right, and you know what's crazy? That one's not even hard. That's not the hard one.
Bro. Yeah, he'll do like easy triple nil kill confirm.
That's the hard one.
Yeah, like you got to do it a few times.
But then it's like you sprinkle the hard stuff in with the easy stuff too in the beginning and end, and then you start getting things into like back air and stuff.
Result in a kill. It's like off the side. He was getting a jab that ended up in a kill off the top. It's like, oh
yeah,
shit.
I think the game.
Wait, does it
changed.
Not matter where you get hit on the stage? Wait a minute, I build my own stage. Oh, you're Ding. I don't know. It's cool. I can just build above the ledge and build some ground here, so I can up smash you. It to me, it's like as someone who's complained about this character from very early on, and knowing, like, especially when we started finding out about the tech, and there was that first push to ban, and even on this podcast, we were very open. We talked about it, and I think most of us on the podcast even advocated for a ban to at least try it. And it's like, it doesn't matter. And you know, it's crazy. Back then we talked about how this day would eventually come. And then the community is going to try to be reactive. And it's like, it's too late. Now we can't do the ban thing because it's just like Brawl. Too much people have put time into this character. If you ban this character, it could affect how much people even show up to the tournament, because a lot of people grind Steve because Steve's the best character in the game by far. So it's like, why wouldn't you do that? And now you're going to punish people or competitors in your community for putting years into this character. We just should have banned him a long time ago, but we didn't. And now we're gonna suffer the consequences. So when you're watching and you see all these thieves, just remember, and you didn't want Steve to be banned, just remember, think back to the time where you thought it was foolish to ban this character. Oh no, give it some time, counterplay, yada yada. It's like there's so many people in the community that understand this game, and they know when a thing will get to a tipping point of broken. And those people spoke out and no one listened. I think this is what you get.
I think we did try, I will say, more so than any game before, which is still not a great effort overall, I'd say. But like there were tournaments that did it. Shout out to Max. Shout out to a couple other tournaments that did ban Steve, and I think still have or still might try. I think the tough thing here is that the game has changed a lot and has grown a lot. So like with smaller communities like Brawl or whatever, even Smash 4, there's a good chance to maybe get a character ban or maybe do that. But dude, it's global. Like there's no way we're going to be able to be like, yeah, everyone needs to do this, and like it's going to happen. Like to me, it just doesn't seem feasible to have. Dude, we can't even settle on a stage list. You know what I'm saying? Like I feel like there's hardly any unified rules anyway. And to make a change as significant as banning a character in total from the game, plus the fact that like some regions are fine with him, you know what I'm saying? Like there are some people who don't really, like you said, Charles, there are some people who don't care. I think the thing, like it really felt like this is one of those weekends that I think we always just need to be ready for when it comes to Steve and Smash and Ultimate and where we're at, is the graphic that comes up on Saturday mornings or Sunday mornings or Saturday nights that are 12 or 15 of the top 64 are Steve players, and then people, it just like snowballs, it feels like, right? Where people are like, oh shit, like here we go, like it's starting to happen. And then other shit starts to happen. Like it wasn't just Syrup doing really well, it was also Susu having a great weekend and showing off again a really high velocity optimized gameplay and route with the character, things that we feared for a long time. Plus Syrup did the forbidden ledge stall stuff. Like it all is, this was the Steve weekend, is how I feel about it.
When HBox starts planking and it's like, oh, he's pulling out the forbidden,
he's
like
doing it, yeah,
he needs to cash out on a W. Mm-hmm.
Like, which is just crazy because we all know it's an option, yet there's no rule against it. I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of times where the Smash community is reactive because of lack of experience, but now it's like current Smash game community, quote unquote, starting from Brawl, we've gone through like multiple different titles of official Nintendo games and unofficial Nintendo games. Like at this, I just don't, it's starting for me. I fought for the Steve ban and it does feel impossible, but like, at least I tried and at least I gave my opinion on it. Mm-hmm. And it just sucks that it felt like it wasn't even explored, or like it kind of got explored. And again, shouts to Max for even going, like taking the risk, because at the end of the day, I understand it is a risk for tournaments too, right? And you could be under other obligations that make you so you can't ban the character and stuff like that. But I wish there was a little bit more back and forth in the community at least, or we all just accept this is the part of the, like, oh hey, we're reaching the end of the game cycle. Here's like all the Meta Knight results. Here's all the Bayo results. Here's all the Steve results. Like, I don't get it, because it's happened so many times, and no matter how many times people from those different eras give their opinion, it just feels like it falls on deaf ears.
It's been literally every game has had this, right? Where they want a character or rule change to something.
No miss. No miss. Never. No miss. Like, I just... to me, this is something I get really passionate about, because it just feels... It feels like I'm banging my head against the wall, and then it's like the community you're trying to help to avoid this era of Steve. And you know, it's crazy. I encourage players to explore those parts of Steve's to bring it to light faster, you know, and even to all the, and I, by no means am I like trying to throw shade at Steve players. Like at the end of the day, you're picking the strongest character. You're learning the hard tech. The things that these Steve players are doing are not easy. These are very technical things to do. Some of them, you have 1 to 2 frame windows to do it. Not very easy, and you have to chain them multiple times. Okay, so huge shout outs to anyone that wants to push the game, but it, like, to me, I just wish this happened sooner. And the fact that, and we all talk about it like this, the fact that Steve could get away winning this long without doing the stuff, it's like, imagine when Steve players start learning to do the tech and they start planking. We all talked about this and we tried to tell the community and just be like, can we get at least like a ledge grab limit, something like. I don't know how much time, like, I guess it just has to actually happen. Then it's like, oh shit. Okay. Now we actually need a ledge grab limit. Fine. Sure. But it just feels frustrating, because if another game comes out and this happens again, like, I don't even know if I want to be vocal. Like, what's the point? Like, I'm just going to watch everything burn.
I think the more important thing to focus on is like some sort of, just work on something more basic, like a unified rule set. Right. Like, and how impossible does that seem in this moment in time? Seems hard to me, right?
Oh, like, you know, it's crazy.
Tell me about it.
I watched Spargo and Semi play on Yoshi's Story twice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what the heck? You know what's even crazier to me? Spargo picked it. I was wild, like, bro, man. you don't even have the option to play at this at any other tournament. Why are you doing that?
It's like, it looks fun, you know. You set up, you're like, this will be a fun stage. You picked the King of Fighters stage. He was just in that mode, dude.
I guess.
But yeah, it's, I totally agree, Charles. It is, there's a lot to it, is what I'll say. It's definitely,
it's not as simple as like getting a group of 50 people to be like, all right, let's do it. I definitely know it's not that. It's really hard. It's probably impossible. But I feel like there is a group of people trying to like warn the community about this, and it felt like it didn't really. Like, no one listened. That's what it felt like. And then it kind of just like went off to the side. And then fast forward a couple years, here we are. People are going to start. Like, you think timeouts are crazy now? You think two characters that can interact with each other in Ultimate and every single game goes down to 1 to 2 minutes. And these are characters that can interact with each other. What do you think is going to happen when a character doesn't have to interact? We want to talk about cheating the game of Smash Bros. Like, Steve is literally doing it. You can re-grab the ledge, and it's simple as like spawning ground underneath him so he can have intangibility when he grabs the ledge. Literally getting around the one of the base mechanics of the intended base mechanics of the game. So it's like, can we do something now? Not, can we at least be reactive? Can we at least agree that it's pretty nonsense that a character can bypass base game mechanic and re-grab the ledge and consider, yes, players will abuse that. So we know that players will abuse that. Like, let's put a ledge grab limit. And we don't even know. The thing is, we're reacting now, and we don't even know what the number should be. So it's like, we still have to experiment with that. There's like so many, like, that's why I wish that stuff was done long ago, because it would have already been settled now. But now we have to wait. And like, it's just, it's also frustrating because the timing too, right? In terms of ultimate, the viewership's dropping and stuff. And we want to keep the game going for as long as possible. But when these things happen towards this part of the lifespan, I would have rather started dealing with these issues, or at least like Steve associated rules at the very least, not even a ban. Let's say banning the character is impossible. Let's just assume that, which it probably is. At least making the rule set so Steve can't like infinitely plank people and just like make the game about like, can your character go off the stage, hit Steve, also make it back without getting reversal? Like, why are we making the game about that? I don't want two players to load in and be like, okay, let's see. So it pretty much comes down to how good Light plays this specific scenario after he gets hit one time, that where this guy is just spam grabbing the ledge and he has to somehow attack him while not getting reversal edge guard, because if he gets hit about his double jump, he's pretty much dead, because Steve can just like face whichever way he wants in the air because of block, and he can literally like ledge drop Firefox at any given point on the startup of Firefox. So why are we making the game about that? I don't want the winner of the game to be based off of a situation where it's like 70 to 80% of like what the result's going to be. So at least can we be reactive and start acknowledging, yes, Steve players will plank and we need a ledge grab limit. Yeah, we got to go all the way back to Brawl. It's Mewtwo King spamming up air off the ledge with Meta Knight again, everyone. Welcome back. Welcome back. 2025, we're here.
Well, he is grounded underneath him, so it's a little different, but...
It's even more broken. Or probably, it's probably not as broken as
Meta Knight. Meta Knight was way more broken.
Yeah, Meta Knight was broken. Okay.
he doesn't need ground above him.
We never slander Meta Knight here.
The re-grab is invincible, so...
It's... Yeah. Literally impossible. Dude, Meta Knight was just... Man, what a broken ass character.
Jesus. Yeah, he ruled.
All right, well, so that's my rant.
Well, so far.
My thing at the end of the day, I am not qualified to say whether Steve should be banned or not.
Can you expand upon that?
I play the game. I don't make the rules. If I made the rules and played the game, that would be a conflict of interest. So. True. I have to put trust in the community.
Very safe back air of you, Gavin. Very safe.
But you have a very well-informed opinion.
Yeah. But it's not. It's just not morally correct for the player.
You to influence something?
It's just a conflict of interest. I hate Steve.
I think the TO, like TOs or people that do make this decision, can get the opinions of other players.
Sure.
And maybe not even opinions of like, do you think this character should be banned?
I think people should also question their own authority.
That's fair.
Are you truly qualified to do what you do in Smash?
I'm sorry, Gavin, I won't ask for the ban again.
No, you're fine.
Charles, you're not qualified, Charles.
Oh, you know what I mean qualified. Though? Like,
No, you're right. You
can look back all the way to the inception of Smash. And like, who was making the rules then? And then we realized that it's a
card shop owners
from like the first Smash games. And the reason why we do things the way we do is simply because it was how it was done before, not because the people who did it were qualified.
So are you saying we should
break the
cycle? I got
bad news for you about real life. That should be happening all the time.
Yeah.
Holy.
And this episode of Unk Talks, bro. Let's hit it. Welcome to the workforce, Jim.
I don't know. Maybe it's like lazy to like think this way and not do stuff myself. But I really don't think it's right. Like,
well, also putting the pressure. Putting the pressure of that on yourself as a competitor is also kind of whack, right? I feel like you'd rather just focus on competing rather than worrying about the rules.
Yeah, I advocate for a unified rule set and stuff, but I don't advocate for like a character ban, and I don't think I ever have. I'm like 99.9% sure I've never said a character should be banned. Have I?
I don't know, but someone will know if you have. We'll find
out
pretty quick.
I'm going to stick by what I said. I'm like 99.9%.
Yeah, you're pretty consistent, I would say.
I've never advocated for a character ban. And even if I have, I still think what I said is pretty truthful in terms of like, it's just not up to me. I'm the consumer. I'm not like the consumer and player. Like I'm not like making the rules. Obviously, like y'all said, like my opinion is pretty useful, but
I don't know. It's like, okay. I mean, we could look at it like NBA terms, right? Like, remember when James Harden was just running down the court and he was just flailing into people?
Yeah, he gets
and,
like, low. Drawing fails. Like, he gets inside you, and then he pulls up for the shot inside you.
Mm-hmm. And people are like,
"It was cheap, bro."
Like the players probably hated it, right? But like, that's not up to them to change the rule. Yeah. The rule's there, so they're going to use it. It's just like that. Like,
exactly. And
the authority above them, which is the NBA, we don't have that. They were the ones that decided, like, actually, this is kind of like, I'm good. Now, I don't know if they consulted any of the players about that or anything, but
yeah
I get it. Like, LeBron's probably like, bro, this is so stupid, but it's in the game, so, like, I can't do anything about it, and it's not my place to, like, remove it from the game. I can't just call up Adam Silver or whatever, like, hey.
At halftime.
Hey, bro. I mean, LeBron might be able to,
there's one person that might be able to. All right, Spargo, I have a question then.
Spargo.
Mid top eight. Call up John Nintendo.
I think that's responsible and clear-headed of you, Gavin. It's terrible content, but it's...
Oh, B hates that I have this opinion, by the way.
It's a good... No, I think that's fair.
I think it's fair for you to be like...
B wants, like, mad bands.
Yeah, I think it's fair for you to be like...
She wanted Kazuya band back when everyone talked about it, too. So.
Like, I think the character is, like, powerful enough to be banned or, like, centralizing enough to be banned. Like, you can have that thought, but, like, it's still not your place as a player. Like, I agree with that. Or like any rule like that, like in any sport, the players shouldn't be able to just make their own rules to benefit them. You know what I mean? Like
for Smash, it's interesting because we make the own rules within the game.
Yep.
Cause the game is like a video game, but
it's
hard.
It's so different than something like League where it's like, this is similar to, you know, League. It's like a team game. Again, Smash isn't, it's like a square peg round hole situation with competitive Smash, right? Like we're trying to make something work because we love it so much and it's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it started with a group of individuals that were just like, okay, well, this thing is just like, this game is a party game, but if we set the rules to this, it's competitive and we can figure out who the best player is in a 1v1 environment with these like set of fair stages or set of fair, quote unquote, like fair being very subjective rules, right? And then it kind of just grew from there, and there was a bunch of different smaller groups of these same people with the same passion essentially, and then they all came together to make the Smash community. So it's very different because we don't have, say, like an association or just a group of people that are the head of it and that, you know, make all the rules and stuff. It's a community driven, it's just grassroots. So
It's
so hard because there's so much options with Smash 2, right? Because like with Street Fighter, it's like, oh, okay, you can kind of customize some of the stuff, right? But like for the most part, there's an intended way to play the game. Same thing like has this point with League of Legends. This here are the towers and however many players you put in whatever lanes, like you can do whatever you want. But at the end of the day, this Nexus goes down and you get gold for whatever.
It's not like you can't like Gentlemen's to Mid Wars or whatever, right? In TI for Dota, like that doesn't, and that was the thing that they said in WoW too, that one of the biggest mistakes they ever made was leaving things in the hands of players to decide what to do with, which is interesting because it is
so bad, bro.
It is because, dude, we don't know, you know what I'm saying?
But some of the best games like Dota came from that.
I know, absolutely. Like it's such a catch 22, right? It's so ridiculous.
I just know for a fact, if I was making the rules for Smash, it just sounds like a red flag. It just...
Oh, yeah, you for sure. No, I'm just kidding.
Honestly, I think I would do a better job than most, but...
Oh, yeah. But, like, you're just saying...
All right, hold on.
Here we go. Here we go. So if you weren't a player... So let's say you're not a player.
I would do a lot of things, bro. All
right, you're in charge of the rules, Gavin. What do you do?
Peach's turnip is the same thing every time she pulls it.
No, you don't change the game. You can't change the game.
I see what he's saying. He's a game designer. No, because you're just asking him what he'd do. Like, you're just trying to trick him into saying his opinion. What the heck? No, I agree with that one 1,000% though, Gavin. It should be consistent. Or if you turn items off, it should be consistent. If you have them on, they could be RNG.
No hazards equals balancing characters.
Well, that's the thing. It's like in Dota, you can't just be like, okay, no one buy this item. We all think it's too powerful. It's like, fuck that. I'm buying that fucking item. It's broken as shit. Like, obviously. And that's why it shouldn't be left to the players. It should be left to the fucking devs and whoever else. And I think we just keep coming back to, you know, the same centralized thing where we don't have that unified, you know, whole front or whatever.
Like, I still think Nintendo hates us and they time the broken DLC towards the end of the game. So we have to deal with it until the next game because they hate us.
I don't think so. I don't think they think about it that deeply, to be honest.
There's
with you.
No way they put that much effort into it. No.
And I think with the last DLC characters, they're more experimental, which therefore leads to more creativity and therefore leads to being better. Like Ryu, Bayo were both super broken in Smash 4, or super good in Smash 4 because they were so...
You're just telling me they're going to turn a blind eye to Ultimate no matter what?
They're not going to make the last DLC character fucking flop. Because
there's
I'll
like straight up glitches.
Yeah, but that character was so weird. They said they had to bring Microsoft in to fucking help dev him. He's a lot.
You're not
dude.
Even gonna try to give us a bone though. Like you're not gonna make
okay.
A
okay. Let's,
the fact
okay,
that Steve is in the game is insane. By the way,
so
like,
you're like a, think of like 99.9% of people who own a copy of Ultimate. They have no idea this shit exists or care. There's just the character works. Like he works.
But early
for sure.
on, glitches like this would get patched like pretty quick.
Oh.
Well, you got to think.
In they also of, hit like, the tech. They also
it doesn't,
hit the tech.
We're straying
yeah,
away
WC
from
players.
The
WC
player.
Players.
Yeah, but I just think.
On a great tournament.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what's fucking crazy? Nest defeated Cloud.
Yes, that was actually like.
I didn't think that would ever happen. That's like been well known as like a GG moment.
Yep.
A GG moment.
For like our whole lives as Cloud existed in Smash.
It is one of my favorite things about Syrup is that he is doing so well and he legitimately still uses Ness.
He can rely on the Ness.
Absolutely. And
he had a game plan. He did it for 5 games. He had a plan.
He's getting that composure too, dude.
Maybe he didn't, but either way, he stuck to it. And damn, bro. This state is crazy. And I think stuff like that is how you close out a tournament. Like you win the game 5 in winners finals, you go back to your plan A, you close it out. Like that's how you get first place. Close game 5s, like doing something that seems risky or experimental. Like I believe in that stuff so much. Like it accelerates growth. Like in the future, Syrup is going to be that much better because of like just like it's like the pressure makes diamonds type of thing. Like, I don't know. It was a crazy event.
Can I ask you on the same token, then you're, you know, sitting in grand finals, knowing that you're going to play against, you know, Mudace or Sonics again, trying to prepare for a set against those two players who, you know, obviously their game plan is to play slower and then hit you really fucking hard. If you mess up, how do you, like mentally prep for being ready to see one of those two on the other side of the sticks going into grand finals? Or did you not think about it too much?
You're I didn't think about in. It too much, but surprisingly playing against them is so different. I think one of the hardest things is being ready to flip the switch that needs to be flipped at any given moment. Because when I played against Sonics game 1, I was playing against him in a way that wasn't going to work and I got destroyed and I just had to figure it out quickly. And then if I compare it to something like my set with Shuton, I did not adapt quick enough and like I just got 3-0'd. So like that's like a connection I would make. And then so I didn't do a lot of prep for Mudace. I probably should have, to be honest, just knowing he's really good. But the night before, I did visualize like playing against him just in case, and it helped out a lot. I still wasn't completely ready when it comes to like the specifics, like stages, but we kept it pretty traditional with like lots of small battlefield and PS2, which is okay, I think. But yeah, for Sonics, it was mostly just being able to realize that I need to slow it down. I was trying to play aggressive, and he just wasn't letting me do it. because his aggression will just match yours and he'll just kill you. Like, but yeah, first Mudace, it was also like slower in some parts, but I was able to burst when it was necessary. There's a couple things I thought was pretty good about that bracket for me. The main thing is, I don't know how anyone else feels about it. I haven't mentioned it. I think I talked about it with B, but we didn't talk about it extensively. I think that was my best Pop Gun bracket ever. Like shooting it.
Interesting.
Like actually shooting it. I don't know why, but something worked there. Like I remember I got one and I was like, damn, that did 10.
This dang, rules. That's a wolf blaster right there.
Yeah, I was like, what the heck? Blaster. Like that's a game winning type of damage for like a situation like that. So yeah, I don't know. Overall though, I was just trying to finish it. I was tired and hungry.
It was late.
It ran late.
Yeah. I did appreciate that the two tournaments were staggered though, so I could watch both of them, which was nice. Yeah.
But other than that, a lot of it was just favorable matchups.
It was your bracket. You have a very specific bracket that you get when you, for the last like year or so, it's a very specific bracket that you get and you win. And I just looked at it. I said, I can't believe he's about to fight Mario into Sonic's in Winners Finals again and get the dub. Like I didn't even consider watching like Winners Finals and Grands, because I was like, once you beat Dominator, you probably win the event. But
it was close.
I like the way you were playing. So, and it was a little unique. It wasn't the way that you've been playing recently.
Yeah. It was very deliberate.
Yeah, and you said you were going to work on like just it, like you kind of like just, I'm just gonna run at people, and I was like,
yeah,
bro ain't running at people. And then I was like, bro is running at people. Yeah. So I was like, okay, like this is entertaining. And there were some moves that you were using that I wasn't used to seeing you use in certain ways. Like your up air usage was very good. A lot of rising up air too, which I found to be a little strange. But
it accesses an angle that I found back air wasn't accessing.
Yeah,
it was mostly for light, and I kind of tried to use it in other ways. Because light is always like full hopping and like outside of the back air. But yeah, I just wanted to play aggressive and try to scare people. I'm just good versus Mario, I think.
You're very good versus Mario.
And then Sonic, I still think, is an even matchup for Diddy Kong, which is like better than most matchups for Sonic. He like beats almost every character probably. So, and then Peach is Diddy Kong favorite as well. So, but I haven't played Mute in a while. Also, shouts to Mute. I think Mute's run was like more impressive than mine. Beating Meister twice and Sonics is like pretty ridiculous. That's a very, very impressive resume.
Peach Game & Watch is not fun.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of Light, where they just work so hard at it. They've like transcended the matchup, which is impressive. Because I think Meister is especially good at those types of matchups specifically. And there were some games that Mudace really was on top of it. So shouts to Mute, like for real. Shouts to Sonics too. He was my roommate over the weekend. We talked a lot about Smash. I think we put a lot of nice ideas into each other's head. We had some cool conversations. We even talked about our sets a little bit. Like our head-to-head set and also some of our other ones. He's a smart guy. I haven't had like a really, really extensive conversation about the game with him, at least in a while. So that was really cool. Yo, there it was, bro. That did
pop
10.
Gun. What?
It did 10, bro.
You hit Sonic the Hedgehog with pop gun.
W. If it hits, that feels nice.
It just seems like a really good full screen option. Like, you have to charge it a little bit, but being able to threaten Sonic from across the stage is a
good. You just have to be so careful, because a bad pop gun is like, will make you never want to do it again. I'm not going to lie.
The distance you're doing it at is impressive in terms of like, it seems like you can't get punished too hard. Like, you might get punished positioning wise, but not actually hit wise.
You just have to be careful.
Dude, that's so strange.
But, Yeah. I thought there was a lot of situations where I played a little sloppy, but overall, I think I was confident. And I think some of my mistakes were like kind of masked by the confidence and kind of helped, because I was trying to play like a psychopath. I'm not gonna lie. Just the only person that really didn't let me do it was Sonic. He just did not let me. I had to, like, I think our set looked more like other sets because he just wouldn't let me hit him. And that's okay. It's good to note, I think.
I mean, when you hit him, I felt like you hit him, which is different, like different than it normally goes. I feel like you cash out and like go back to like a ledge trap situation, maybe back to neutral, get your banana. But I felt like sometimes you're like, I don't even need this banana, man. Like, I'm just...
That was pretty noticeable for other sets too. Yeah. I think I talked about it a little bit in the VOD review I did for Patreon. That's... Well, y'all will probably be able to see at the same time as this if you're a patron or a YouTube member. Yeah, it's interesting. As Diddy Kong, there's always a couple questions you have to ask yourself when you're in advantage or setting up a ledge trap, or if there's space between you and your opponent. Do I pull banana? Do I control center? Do I go for the ledge? It just depends on how many frames you have. And there's a lot of scenarios where I had a ledge trap, but I wouldn't be able to get banana, and I would choose the ledge trap and just play really pressure based. Whereas like, there might be a scenario where I might sacrifice the advantage state to pull banana. But yeah, I think it just, you got to wake up and see how you're feeling that day and try to run with it.
Dude, speaking of those concepts you're talking about with Diddy Kong, you should watch, did you watch Junebug's video about Diddy Kong in PM?
I watched like half of it, but we were in a Discord call, so I didn't want to like, yeah.
He talks about that concept and how Diddy Kong's been pushed in that game. So that's really interesting, actually. Like, when do you disengage from neutral and grab the banana peel?
Versus, yeah, there's always extra questions.
Same thing, so interesting.
With each, I'd imagine, it, obviously, Rob,
Hero, any setup,
everyone. And, yeah. But it's similar concepts of knowing how much frame advantage you truly have, engaging the risk reward, and balancing neutral versus advantage, blah blah blah. And there's a lot of baits that come with that, and I think I've always been pretty good at those baits. Like, oh, I'm gonna pull banana, just kidding, I'm not, like that kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know.
I was talking to Void because he was there, and
yeah,
I was saying how I feel like a lot of players now, and this is not just in Smash, I feel like it's in a lot of games, they try to solve the game and they go on with their game plan and like, this is what works, this is what doesn't work, and they like don't deviate from it too often, or they try to set up the situations to be like in their favor over and over again, or try to like make those situations that are good for them happen. And I was like, I feel like that is why the best players in the world, the ones that like who win consistently, they don't do that. Unless their character's like giga broken and like everybody has to solve their problem. They are like the lights and the glutos, like they will sit there and they'll go, all right, man, I gotta figure this out. Like,
yeah.
The game plan I have going in was working. It wasn't working. Like, I need to make those adjustments here. When I think about like Street Fighter, like, this man Punk is he's winning on Cammy. That character keeps getting nerfed because he keeps winning, and he still keeps finding a way to win because he's just better than everybody else. You know what I mean? So, and he plays with that. Like, hey, I'm better than you, even though this might not be in like my favor. I know that you're gonna do this, so I'm going to hate you for it. Like,
Gluto is infamous for his adaptation, which actually, I think if y'all think about it, it's not something that gets thrown around towards a lot of players. We don't always call someone crazy at adapting. It kind of is more of an expected trait among good players. But for some reason, Gluto specifically gets that compliment thrown at him a lot. And like, you don't hear that praise often. Like I said, it's usually like expected with the job, but there's something about Gluto specifically that all of his peers are always saying it's like ridiculous adaptation. It definitely is. Like, definitely, yeah. It definitely is.
And I think the last thing, sorry. The biggest thing that Void said to me that had me like kind of sitting there thinking is he was like, you know, when I watch Light play, like there's his obvious win cons and then he makes win cons. So like he won't just like play for those specific win conditions. He'll just be like, all right, well, this I need to make a win condition because my win conditions currently aren't working. And there aren't many players in the world that can do it. Like the best of the best usually can figure that out. But it feels like a lot of the players are like straying away from that, like making my own win con mentality, like going more toward the like, I'm just going to have the super solid game plan. And this is the perfect version of Smash. I'm not actually directing this to you, Gavin, even though it probably sounds that way. Now that I think about it, but
no, I know.
But I was just thinking, like, I feel like sometimes I watch like Sonics and that happens, that's how he ends up timing himself out so often because he's like so focused on like this game plan. And
yeah,
or when I'm watching like Akola sometimes, or even Mia, they're like, I'm doing these things that are strong. And I'm not going to deviate from them. And then they just lose. And it's like, that's tough.
I was going to say with Gluto, I think two things about him being one of the best adapters. And I think the first one, his character exacerbates that quite a bit. Yeah. Where when Wario hits you, he fucking hits you. So when he starts adjusting and he starts edgeguarding you and he starts adjusting his recoveries, not getting picked, like he's a pretty peaks and valleys character, it almost feels like, in a way, where when he's winning, he's fucking winning.
Right? I hate it, dude. Yeah. It's so hard to play.
And when, right. And he wins in these ways where it's like one of the ideal scenarios is I want to go last stock, I'm at 150, you're at zero. Like that's almost ideal to him, which is insane. And then you think about like where did this kind of come from? And it's because he was in the trenches in Smash 4 so much with this dog shit character that he had to, it's not Wario getting buffed helped him so much, but playing Smash 4, awful, awful, worst version of Wario we've ever seen, and having to figure out how to beat people consistently, I think molded him into one of the best adapters we've ever seen. Because he had no other fucking choice. He didn't have witch time to kill you at zero in Smash 4. He had to sit there and, I don't want to say honestly, what? Why'd you look at me like that, Marcus? Oh, I can't hear you. Is that me or you?
Oh, no, it's me. My bad. Yeah, what's up with that? What's up with that, bro? What's wrong with Witch Time?
Well, yeah, I love Witch Time, obviously. I won many deserved sets with that move, of course. Anyway, but what I'm saying is he didn't have something to bail him out, so he was always trying to figure out more layers and more to do with his game because there wasn't that much there. And now there is, and now we kind of see the fruits of that labor. So I think about that all the time, and like the mental that it takes to play that dog shit version of that character, do so well with him in Europe, then come over to the USA, get your ass kicked, and be like, I'm sticking with it. Like, it's all good. Like, whatever. Like you said, guy, he's just someone I think all of us respect very, very much. Like you said, everyone thinks that of him, basically. And I think it just points to it being true, plus those two things. Yeah.
It's crazy when his peers that are, like, all top level have such high praise. It's rare for something to be so universal. It's strange. It's just strange to me, like, because the words used towards him are just different. It reminds me of Leo, too. We don't just say someone's spacing is good. It's, like, expected. So when the spacing is mentioned, it must be nice. You know what I mean? Like,
perfect.
Like, with Leo, like, with the spacing thing, with Gluto, with the adaptation, like, it's just not compliments that are thrown around often. Like, we talk about advantage state and, like, neutral and defense, but like spacing and like adaptation is like so, I guess they're harder to notice or something, or like harder to compliment.
I think how you word it makes a lot of sense. It's expected, right?
Yeah.
And I for me, what's so impressive about Gluto's adaptation, Gluto is from an environment that didn't have a lot of players that were at his skill level. Like right now, there is a lot of players at Gluto's skill level, maybe even better. Right, it's very different. But Europe was not always like that. Only recently, like even within Ultimate, it's been like that. But even early Ultimate, all of Smash 4, all of Brawl, like there was a pretty big gap in terms of who Gluto could practice with skill-wise. And like, because he was farming his regionals with like secondaries. So the fact that this player probably of all the top 10 or top 20 or however, you know, top echelon of players that we have in Ultimate, of all those players, he probably has the least amount of experience traveling abroad and fighting different play styles and like going through the motions to get a high praise adaptation like he does. So to me, that even adds on another layer of just how impressive it is that he has such high praise for that. And I also do think that Gluto is the best adapter in the game. And it also, like what Haz was saying, to add on to that, it complements his playstyle and what his character does, right? It's like, okay, well, my character by design, I don't have a lot of range. I'm a little stubby. I have good air mobility. And I'm going to lose most air-to-air interactions if you just have a big aerial for the most part, right? Like, you're just going to have the option to swing sooner than I can even be able to hit you. So he just gathers information. And like Haz said, in the situation where it's last stock, Gluto's at 150 and you're at zero, guess what Gluto was doing the entire game? Your first whole two stocks. He's gathering information on how you operate with 0% in different scenarios at 0% right at the start, 0% when he's on his next stock afterwards at high percent. Like, all this time, he's gathering information and he only needs to hit you once to win. So even though he loses, like say, to get to that spot, he probably lost neutral, or maybe he got cheesed or gimped. Not something Wario happens to Wario usually. He has a very good recovery. So for the most part, you have to damage Gluto quite a bit to get him in those scenarios, but he's gathering information the entire time. And then he finds that one opening because he just delays his drift in just a little bit more, or he like weaved out and then weaved in instead of going straight in, just so it could bear. Like, if Wario is whiff punishing you with forward air and your move is 3 to 4, maybe even 5 times bigger than said forward air, in terms of like what someone has to do, like they have to read your soul. They have to know exactly when and where you're going to throw the hitbox out so they can pre-position and already start moving in as your hitbox just runs out. So as your hitbox runs out, they're overlapping that area where your hitbox was with their hurtbox, and they're coming in for the perfect narrow fair, whatever combo starter Gluto is going to go for.
I love Wario.
So yes, what Gluto does is fucking
insane. That's awesome.
That's my favorite.
It's cinema, bro. He's such a great spectator character
of all time.
Nice. I just thought of an idea for a Patreon content, and it's fun. Maybe
inspired?
I think it's good. I think even Gavin will stick around for it. It'll be pretty quick.
When we have to convince Tweet to.
Well, he already did. He already did content, so it's like I know. You know, I'm gonna have to do a little selling here. So we'll see how that goes. I think it'll be fun. But if not, Gavin already uploaded content. But
I'll be there.
Overall, congrats, Gavin and Syrup. Great weekend. I'm sad I missed the episode before this, by the way. I watched the EU tournament. I woke up to Super Semi beating Spargo, which was just insanity. It's been a really interesting kind of roller coaster in Ultimate. Gav, what's
things
your
are still
next
changing, bro?
Yeah. What's your next event, Gav?
I don't know the date order. I know I have Battle BC, Level Up, etc. I'm trying to go to Japan. I'm likely going to Japan, but
nice.
It's not easy to set that up. But you can assume as the viewer / listener, I'm going, but it's not set in stone yet. Lots of stuff happening. Life is busy. We also didn't talk much about the Pokemon thing because I was traveling and we had the episode the day before. Legends looks cool. I'm excited to play Pokemon like I'm a kid, like thinking I'm in the anime with move cooldowns and like dodging and like running around. Like that is lit.
It's like Ash's forbidden move of saying dodge it, you know?
Yeah, we get to do that.
Now. Yeah. Really cool. Mm-hmm. The Patreon content idea I have is Pokemon related. So if that intrigues anybody, that will intrigue Gavin. Gavin, I know that. So
If you are interested in the bonus content, it is available on YouTube, as stated earlier in the episode. So Patreon, or you can become a YouTube member. Gavin's been uploading some of the previous
like
stuff. And going
for anyone who doesn't know, it's like a Twitch sub type of thing. Expect one or two uploads a week for Patreon content, a mix of VOD reviews and general bonus content at the moment. Maybe that'll change. Maybe there'll be more ideas. Something I think we should talk about someday, especially on bonus content, is like attributing players to like different categories, because we just talked about advantage, disadvantage, movement, adaptation, like the general stuff, and who we think are some of the best players of those categories. I feel like that's probably something we've done before, but because adaptation is such a weird one. So it got me thinking about the other ones and like what players I think of.
Like superlatives, basically. We did that for Throne. Remember, we did like the theme, like different champions.
That was pretty cool.
That was cool. Yeah, I'm happy to do that again if we get the categories. I think that's fun as fuck.
Yeah.
Every top player thinks that they're the best player at item control.
We're gonna offend some people.
I always ask all of them, and it's always the same question or answer. Oh, I'm the best.
They player. Are so silly.
Because it's you.
Yeah.
See.
Well, even if it's not me, now. It's not them.
Who is it? Me?
It's probably Hazen's Richter.
It could be my Belmont. I do have nice clips with Rob Gyro. Anyway, very cool. Very cool. Anyway.
Thank you for supporting the podcast. Hope everyone has a good one, and we'll see you soon.